Well, as you are well aware, in just a little less than 4 weeks, we will be observing the Feast of Trumpets. And that Feast of Trumpets kicks off a three-week period of time during which we observe four festivals, and it also includes the full week of the Feast of Tabernacles. Of course, we're all very familiar with that time period, and for most of us, I would say probably the vast majority of us, that period of time, those three very concentrated weeks, are the most highly anticipated time of the year. We certainly look forward in the late winter to the Passover as it approaches, but the Feast of Tabernacles itself is something that we begin our plans for well in advance, at least in the spring of the year, and you may well have already begun making plans for the 2015 Feast of Tabernacles. So it's something that we all have the opportunity to participate in and to look forward to. And when we consider the prophetic meaning of those fall holy days, it's certainly fitting that we place such an emphasis on their observance. Together, those days represent, or they teach us about, the end of the age, the return of Jesus Christ, the banishment of Satan, and the establishing of the kingdom of God, providing a way for every person who ever lived to be part of it. Talk about an ambitious plan. You know, as we observe these days from year to year, from season to season, we become accustomed to them. But I think it's good to sit back and just consider what an amazing thing is happening and what an amazing God we have. As Paul expressed it in Ephesians 3, it's the love of God, of course, which the plan is based upon. The love of God is beyond what we can comprehend, beyond what we're able to imagine. He says that it's exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. You know, it's beyond our wildest imagination to consider that God has this plan set in motion, and it is certain that it will be accomplished. And we will be among those who benefit from it. As the New International Version puts it, and I'm looking at Ephesians 3, verse 20, what God is doing is immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine. So think of your wildest fantasy of wealth or of blessing, and this is beyond anything that we could imagine. And that's hard for us to remember as we face those daily grind and the trials and the concerns of our lives, but that promise is there and it never fades. The kingdom is something that we certainly ought to be excited about, we learn more about, and we yearn for. But the biggest question on our minds is when? When is this kingdom going to be established? When will Jesus Christ return so that that kingdom will finally be put in place? We've pictured it for years, decades, in most cases, as we observe all of the holy days and especially the fall holy days. But when will the reality come? I want to continue a theme that I started a couple of weeks ago, and the title of the message today is The Beginning of the End, Part 2. We talked about the beginning of the end, or from the beginning to the end, a couple of weeks ago. I want to continue with that thought and focus again on the question of when. When will these things come about? Now, one thing we should realize or consider is that when we talk about the end of the age, it has kind of an ominous sound to it, doesn't it? And we know that there are some ominous events that will take place. But the end of this age is not a bad thing. It's actually a very good thing. It's the hope of mankind, as a matter of fact. And we know, though, that from the transition, or that the transition from this age into the new age will be challenging, There will be some difficult times to experience, but the outcome of it will be the accomplishing of that plan. Many times we've read Galatians chapter 1, verse 3, where we're told that the purpose that God has for us is that through Jesus Christ, He will deliver us from this present evil age. And I've commented often that that's really just a one-sentence summary of God's plan. Through Jesus Christ, God will deliver us from this present evil age. We understand that, we look forward to it, and when we're focusing on it at a time like this, when we have a message about it, we have it clearly in mind. But oftentimes, it's not easy for us to remember and to live from day to day with that promise and that hope in mind. Acts chapter 1, verse 6, we find the time when Jesus was taken back up to the Father's throne after completing the mission for His first coming. And just as we immediately start planning the next Feast of Tabernacles before we even get to this one, Jesus Christ was already planning His return and the promise of that return before He was taken up to God's throne after His first coming. But we see the disciples questioning Him in verse 6 of Acts 1. Therefore, when they had come together, they asked Him, saying, Lord, will You at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? Now, the disciples at this point still had a fairly narrow view of what they thought they understood Jesus was going to do. They knew that He would restore, and all the Jews in general were looking for a Messiah who would restore their nation, who would restore and fulfill the promises given in many Old Testament passages about the land being restored to the people and being ruled by the Messiah. They, of course, didn't recognize what we do, what we've learned through the Holy Days, that was going to happen at the second coming of Jesus Christ, and in fact, over a period of more than 1,000 years for all of the world, all of the earth to be restored according to the promises that were made. The disciples knew they wanted that to happen. They knew they wanted Jesus Christ to establish that government and that authority. And even now, after all that they'd learned, after all the time they'd spent with Him, they were still asking, is now the time? Are You going to do it now? It's like our children in the back seat. Are we there yet? And my wife and I had our four grandchildren earlier in the summer. We were on our way to the Columbus Zoo, about an hour and a half drive from where my daughter lived. We were spending time with her. We got all the kids and headed for the zoo. And for the last half an hour, they were chanting over and over and over, are we there yet? Are we there yet? And they started doing kind of a sing-song. It was kind of fun to listen to their voices, how they blend, and it was almost musical. That's how I kept from screaming. But we probably go before the Father over and over again as well. You know, is it time yet? Either for the kingdom or for our particular trials to be to come to their conclusion. Are we there yet? Is a question that we continually ask. So anyway, we have a broader perspective and understanding than the disciples did of just what that kingdom is going to be and how it will be established. And they were anticipating and probably wishing that Jesus would just start and initiate that kingdom right there. Well, as time passed, those in the early years of the church still felt that Jesus was going to establish the kingdom in their lifetime. Consider Paul's words in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians 4. We know that in this passage, we're going to read part of verse 15. He speaks of the first resurrection, the resurrection that will occur when Jesus Christ returns. But look at the way he described it. 1 Thessalonians 4:15, "For this we say to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord will by no means precede those who are in their graves." Clearly, in this statement, Paul is implying, and now this is 20 years after what we saw in Acts chapter 1. Paul wrote this epistle in about the year 51, which make it 20 years following the time that he was taken back up to the Father's throne. And at that point, Paul is, and this is, by the way, one of the earliest of his epistles. probably only the book of Galatians would have been written prior to 1 Thessalonians. And even that may have been written after. It was one of the very early of his epistles. But at this point, in about the year 51, he's speaking as if he and others will, in that generation or in that church, would be alive at the time when Jesus returns. I don't think that that's wrong. Certainly it wasn't correct, but it's not wrong. Paul had that urgency and that desire for the kingdom. But let's fast forward another 16 years to an epistle he wrote in the year 67. 2 Timothy, the 4th chapter. 2 Timothy 4, and verse 7. And we are familiar with this statement as well. It's one of the stirring and inspiring statements that Paul made, and the one that we want to share as well. Paul says in writes in 2 Timothy 4, 7, "I fought the good fight, I finished the race, I've kept the faith." At some point, we will reach that point, that time in our lives as well. Finished the race and kept the faith. "Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day." Here at the end of his life, Paul had come, and we don't know at what point, perhaps along the way, but another 16 years after the time that Jesus was taken up to heaven, up to the Father's throne, Paul understood that he would not live to see Jesus Christ return, that he would be among those who would be the first to rise to meet him, as he had written in 1 Thessalonians, or to the Thessalonians. Paul certainly understood and had faith that his reward was now laid up, to be kept in reserve for him in heaven, to be awarded to him on that day, at the time when Jesus Christ would return. And he would present that crown of righteousness to each one who had been faithful. The New Testament church grew to that understanding. Peter expresses it as well. I won't read it, but you could jot down and look at 1 Peter 1:4. In that passage, 1 Peter 1, verse 4, Peter also wrote, and this was probably in about the year 63 AD, slightly before the time that 2 Timothy was written. But he uses a similar expression, saying that we have an inheritance that is reserved in heaven. And so the understanding came that time would extend further than what they had anticipated. In some ways, that's happened to us as well. Any of us who have grown up in the church may remember the times in the late 60s and early 70s when we anticipated that the age could end at that point. And it extended beyond that. And we also grew in our understanding. But each generation has had that same anticipation, that same expectation, have waited and wondered, when will that time come? Well, let's go back to Luke 21. Luke, the 21st chapter. The Olivet Prophecy is recorded in Luke 21, also in Matthew 24 and 25, and in Mark 13. Jesus gave this prophecy in answer to the question the disciples had asked. They were asking what would be the signs of the end of the age and of his return. And we'll read some of those signs. But before we do that, I want to get to this, to the lesson that Jesus wanted us to learn from what he had revealed. And Mr. Martin read from Mr. Frank's letter that quoted the statement in Matthew that parallels this. Luke 21, beginning in verse 28. Helps if you're in the correct chapter. Luke 21, verse 28. I have. Jesus spoke a parable to them. He said, "Look to the fig tree and all the trees. When they're already budding, you say that summer is near. So you also, when you see these things happening, know that the kingdom of God is near." So Jesus revealed certain things to the disciples, and then it was recorded for us to let us know what are the signs of the end of the age. What are the things that we should be aware of that will happen before his return? We're going to continue with a reminder or a review of those signs. But we learn, first of all, the lesson for why he gave us those signs, so that we'd be able to see and be aware of things that are happening and understand the significance of them. The turning of the leaves, the bearing of fruit of a tree, a fruit-bearing tree, they're harbingers of the next season. He said, look to all the trees, and we can look at all the trees and we can look at the cycles, certainly that we experience here in our climate. We know that within a few weeks, the leaves on those trees are going to begin changing colors. And in fact, a few have already, but within a few weeks, the oak trees, the maple trees, the other hardwood trees will be ablaze with beautiful autumn colors. And we'll anticipate that, look forward to it. We know that it's coming. And we know that when that happens, winter is going to follow. We know that the next season is going to begin. Then, of course, in late winter, we start watching for those buds on the trees to begin to swell and to come to life. And we know that the next season, again, is about to begin. So Jesus is showing us, by the way that he responded to the disciples, what it will be like. What is the sign that a new season is going to begin? He didn't tell us exactly when it would happen, but he told us what to watch for. He gave us signs to let us know when that is going to happen. So we'll review here in some of Jesus' words, again, the signs that we can be watching for and the indications that a new season, or in this case, a new age, is coming. I want to read today mostly from Luke. Luke, the 21st chapter. Again, basically the same message and with a little bit difference in the details is given in each of these three. In Luke 21, Mark 13, and Matthew 24. The first sign that Jesus gave that we should be aware of and looking to has to do with teachings about him. Verse 8 in Luke 21, he says, "Take heed that you be not deceived. For many will come in my name, saying, I am he, and the time has drawn near. Therefore, do not go after them." False teachers have been certainly part of the scene from the very beginning, from very shortly after Jesus died. False teachers about him began to emerge. He also said that there would be specific false teachings about the time of his return. that the time has drawn near. Therefore, he says, do not go after them. Part of our responsibility, being warned of this, is to be able to recognize and to distinguish what is the correct teaching about Christ and what is correct teaching about the time of his return. There's a great deal of confusion, and a lot of people take advantage of others' fears and teach about the return of Christ in ways that they're very deceitful and misleading. Verse 9, when you hear of wars and commotions, do not be terrified, for these things must come to pass first, but the end will not come immediately. Wars, of course, pretty obvious, and we do see, as Matthew recorded, wars and rumors, or in other words, reports of wars, or something that would intensify over time. The word commotions, though, is one that Luke uses that's not used in the other two accounts of this message. The word commotions is from a Greek word that means instability or a state of disorder. Confusion or anarchy. That definition comes from Vine's Expository Dictionary of Biblical Words. Commotions describes a time of disorder, a time of disturbance, a time of confusion. Certainly, as we look at the world in which we live, we see growing levels of commotion. There are hazards, difficulties on every level, it seems, and the world has become a very unstable place. He says that we should not be terrified. The word terrified means startled or alarmed. There are things that happen around us, and it seems that they're growing in their intensity as well as in the numbers of occurrences, things that are very startling, things that are very alarming. And you know, when we turn on the news each day, there seems to be something else that has happened somewhere that is an alarming, a worrisome event. But Jesus says that we don't need to be startled or alarmed simply because we recognize from him the warning that he's given that these things are going to take place. So we don't take them lightly. We must never be unaffected by what's happening around us, but we are able to process them and deal with them differently from others because we have a greater context and understanding. The word end that's used here is translated, and I think I mentioned this recently, is translated from a Greek word meaning to complete to the last detail. The end, that is the completion of what is going to be done, does not come right away. The totality of what will be accomplished is much more than the individual events that we see happening. Every detail of what is planned must be completed before this age is over and new age begins. But again, as we look at what's happening today, we certainly see and understand that it is becoming much more unstable, much more difficult. We keep that in context, understanding that, as Luke expresses Jesus' words here, the end is not yet, even when we see those commotions, those disruptions, those difficulties. But it's part of the leaves beginning to turn. It's part of what we observe that's happening around us. If nothing else, we see the events that are coming about, and we sense that something is happening, a change is occurring. The world is a different place today than it was 3 years ago, much less 5, 10 or more years ago. We know that the dangers and the likelihood of those dangers coming about in actual events is much greater today than it has been. The world is increasingly unstable. And as I quoted a news reporter a few weeks ago, in his view, the world is coming unraveled. So we observe that within the United States, within our culture, within our leadership, within our economy. We see it on international levels. You know, international crises kind of tend to build and grow, and then it pops up someplace else. Right now, our eyes are on Ukraine, our eyes are on Iraq, and in the Middle East. Who knows where the next hotspot is going to erupt. It could continue to grow in those areas. It could move to another geographical location. But it is unstable. And we also see, as these problems accumulate and grow and come together in some ways, that the problems are not going to be solved. There is no human solution. Listen to them talk about the relationship between the Arabs and the Jews. There is no hope. Consider the warnings that we have about the economy of our own nation, that we're on a track that we cannot get off of, and there is no solution to our economy other than that it will collapse. These problems are becoming more and more clear. Now, we've always understood that was going to be the case, that only Jesus Christ can solve the world's ills and problems. But now, as we see them more specifically for what they are, it's becoming all the more obvious that it doesn't matter. You know, I get just as upset, maybe more than others, when I consider the decisions and the leadership that we have in our nation today. And, the seeming just foolish decisions that are made. There's no sense to them. But I also realize, as you do, that in November, if we change things around a bit through elections, ain't going to help. There'll be other people with different solutions that also won't work. The answer is not within this age. Again, we know that, but now we see those kinds of issues coming together, and we recognize more clearly the absolute need for Jesus Christ to sort things out. So we're aware of conditions, and I always try to avoid attaching a specific news event to a scripture. Jesus didn't speak in those terms. He spoke in terms of general conditions and events that we see happening kind of add up to fulfill those conditions that he spoke of. And so we don't need necessarily to tie. Maybe, there will be, I'm sure, some key events that will take place that will turn in a direction that will directly fulfill prophecy. But as we look at the words of Jesus Christ, as I said, we sense, we recognize something is happening. We don't know exactly where it's going to lead or when it's going to take us there. But if we are paying any attention at all, and if we take Jesus' words into account, then we'll be looking at those leaves. We see the things that are happening. Down into verse 10 here in Luke 21, we see some of the other areas that will follow. Even though the commotions come about, the wars, the deceitful teachings, the end does not come immediately. What follows are other events. Verse 10, nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. That indicates the scope of war. Beyond regional wars, this is talking about vast war, world wars, where kingdoms and nations are going to battle against one another. And those battles take different forms now. There are weapons that are used, but there also are cyber weapons. And the manipulation of computer systems that can disrupt our economy, for example, the Wall Street is controlled by computers. Our power grid is controlled by just I think 7 or 8 key centers that our entire nation's power grid depends upon. And if just 2 of those were taken out, the entire nation would be crippled. The dangers are growing, and the vulnerability is growing. That's not a specific prophecy, but we see how the conditions that Jesus described are building, are coming about. And we're not to be terrified by that. You know, people often panic over their fears and concerns, and they run out and invest everything they have in a pile of gold or whatever they think is going to sustain them. We have a different understanding of what all those kinds of events mean. But there'll be these wars in which nations are battling one another. Verse 11, great earthquakes in various places, famines and pestilences, and fearful signs and great signs from heaven. Famines and pestilences, the word pestilence means a widespread epidemic or plague. That's the meaning of the Greek word. Earthquakes are probably a general term that include other kinds of natural disasters. But, you know, pestilence or disease epidemics are certainly something that can happen. We might think we can hide behind medical science, but that's not true. The recent threat of the Ebola virus is an example of that. A disease that is from which the vast majority of those who contract it die, and there is no reliable cure. The only experimental drug that they have to fight Ebola takes months to prepare, and right now none of that is available. It's all been used, and that's just beginning. You hear every day how it's spreading through Africa, and the fears of health officials that it could move into our nation. Is that specifically what this is speaking about? I don't know. Maybe this one will pass. Maybe there have been other scares in the past. There was, you know, there are all kinds of Asian flus that we hear about from season to season, or mosquitoes have the Nile River fever virus sometimes, and there are all kinds of things bird flu, remember that one? We were all worried about the bird flu a few years ago. Well, that one didn't come about, but still could. How it will happen, we don't know for sure. But we know that the potential is there. Mentions the great signs in heaven, probably a reference to the heavenly signs that are part of the sixth seal in Revelation. Now, each of these major trends seems to be represented as well among the seals in the book of Revelation. The prophecies that are fulfilled as Jesus Christ rolls back and opens up the seal on this scroll. So Revelation 6 seems to reinforce the warnings that are given in Matthew 24. The fulfillment of those seals is probably something more specific that will take place in intensifying these general trends closer to the end of the age. We'll talk about the seals in Revelation when we have another opportunity. Verse 12, in addition to all this, see, all this is happening to the world all around us. The wars, the disease epidemics, the famines, even the signs in heaven, just happening in general to the world. But there also will be some things that will be specific trials for those who are part of the truth, who are the disciples of Jesus Christ. Before all these things, that is, before the major events begin to unfold that he was describing in verse 11, They'll lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and prisons. You'll be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake." So, in the midst of all this other turmoil and commotion that's happening, there will be a time that Jesus speaks of persecution upon those who are faithful disciples. Now, we know that historically those things have happened. There's been persecution in the past. We also know that there will be persecution in the future. Again, just exactly how that will come about, don't know yet. Will it be just directed at the church? Will it be directed at those who claim to be Christians in a more general sense? You see the ugly brutality that those in the Middle East are capable of, especially the rebels there in Iraq. Just inhuman in their approach to persecuting those who don't convert to their religion. It's hard for us to imagine those kinds of events taking place. But again, Jesus is telling us not to be terrified by these things. He's giving us a warning so that we'll be aware that certain things have to happen and will happen. We might compare this statement in Luke to what we have in Mark 13, verse 12. Mark 13, verse 12, where Luke is at this, and what we've read here in verse 12 of Luke was more general. Mark 13, 12 speaks of it again in a very personal way, that brother will betray brother. Brother will betray brother to death. I mean, this is a serious level of betrayal. A father will betray his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. So there's a breakdown in this unity that some will experience, not everyone, but some will cave to the pressures that will come about, and some of the persecution will come certainly from outside the church, but some of the persecution will also come from within families. And again, that's hard to imagine. Hard to imagine that it will come to that. But that's what Jesus wants us to be aware will happen. Some of the trends that we see that are going to take place. Now, Luke goes on, has the most detailed discussion about this of the three different presentations of this sermon, and he reminds those that will be in that position to simply rely on him, that he will provide through his Holy Spirit the answers that people will need so that they can properly relate there and be the witness and to be faithful in it. So we see a number of things that are happening here that are part of the conditions that Jesus Christ is warning of. He warns of religious deception and confusion in general, and in particular, deception about prophecies of the end time. He warns about wars, and some of those wars seem to be more regional, more localized, and others tend to be major world wars, nations and kingdoms battling. He warns of earthquakes or other natural disasters that will take place. And I think, in a way, we're just kind of all waiting, aren't we? Just kind of holding our breath for that big one that's going to hit, maybe California primarily, but also all the way up into through Oregon and into Washington. It's within the ring of fire. Just in the eastern part of Oregon and Washington and down through central California are a whole series of live volcanoes. And you can see on a map, they extend around the Pacific Rim to the west of the United States. And, you've heard probably that Yellowstone is just it's a bomb waiting to go off. And when Old Faithful, we all, isn't that neat to see the Old Faithful geyser? You know what that means? That means that the earth underneath there is hot, and one of these days it's going to come bubbling up, and there's going to be an earthquake and a volcanic action at a level that will, they fear, virtually destroy the whole eastern, everything east of that, the general wind direction, would be just smothered in volcanic ash. Hope you all sleep well tonight. Jesus gave us these warnings so that we would not be unaware of things that will happen at the end of the age. Now, we don't know. We ask the question, when? We don't know for certain that these things will happen in our lifetime. But we also recognize, as we sense things changing, as we see the world growing more unstable, as we see events happening that can easily be a kind of a forerunner of the major events along the same line, the epidemics, the earthquakes, we must not be ignorant. We must not avoid thinking about those things. Now, there's more to it than just being afraid of what's going to happen, but it's important for us to see these things, and Jesus gave us that warning. But the other side of that is what we find in 2 Peter chapter 3. People look at the same things you look at and they say, what's the big deal? It has always been like this. There have always been wars. There's always been disease. There's always been famine. There's always been earthquakes. And it goes in a big cycle and it comes back around the other side again. And everything's all right. Yeah, so far. But that's the attitude that people in general have, and one that we need to be careful about as well. 2 Peter 3, verse 1. Beloved, I now write to you this second epistle, in both of which I stir up your pure minds by way of reminder. I really enjoy, and Peter makes this comment another time or two in his epistles as well. And it helps me, because I know that I come back often to the same general subjects over and over again. But you know what? Peter says that's all right. He says we've got to be reminded of things that we already know. And he wrote this epistle to remind those who knew these things to keep them in mind. So in that same spirit, we have our Sabbath service every week because we need to be reminded, even of things that we have learned, to stir up our remembrance by way of reminder, that you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets. Much of what we review and the prophecies we rehearse and the holy days that we keep year after year, we go through the same pattern, sometimes the same general messages, because it's in Scripture and it's for us and we need to be reminded. Things were written by the holy prophets, by the commandment of us, and by the commandment of us, the apostles of our Lord and Savior. Knowing this first, okay, so here's a warning that he's given. First of all, the first part of his reminder is this. There are things we've been told about over and over again by the prophets, by the holy days, by messages that we hear. But first of all, remember this, that scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all these things continue that were from the beginning. And so there's the attitude that we find so often. Not so much in the church, but I think we have to be careful about that. But we find people that are truly scoffing at prophecy because all they see, because they don't have that perspective that you have, they don't see that, you know, yeah, it's the same things that perhaps going in a cycle, but things are changing. It's different now. There's more to it than there was the last time around. We catch that. People who scoff at those prophecies don't. Cynicism is a kind of a disease in a way. People look at things, they always look at the other side, the dark side, the hidden side. They try to find what people are not saying. Cynics, scoffers, will look at prophecy and shrug their shoulders and dismiss it. It's important that we, of course, not let that kind of attitude be our approach. Back to Matthew 24 again. Verse 12. Another warning that Jesus gave to us that happens before the final end time events begin, and that's what we've been talking about. Another concern or another warning he gives to us is here in verse 12 of Matthew 24. Where Jesus says, because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. You see, we may not have that completely cynical, scoffing approach that others have, but one thing we need to guard against is that as time goes on, and it has, hasn't it? I have grandchildren. You know, I wasn't supposed to, according to what I learned when I was in high school, I would never even get married because the end of the age was going to come. Now, the end of the age is going to come, but it didn't happen in 1973 or 72 or 75. But one thing that we have to guard against is that the world doesn't wear us down. We live in this world that is built on compromise, on selfishness, on self and satisfying pleasure. We live in our society. Others don't in other countries, but we live in our society with a constant threat of drifting away from God because we get caught up in other things, other temptations, other opportunities, other options that we have in life, and the warning that we can see here from Jesus' words is that we know that lawlessness is going to abound. The fun is out there. The easier way is out there. And the longer we have to hang on to it, what we believe has been given to us, then in some cases the more difficult it is to continue in it. And the more likely a person is to be caught up in other things, to draw them away. So Jesus warns that because lawlessness in this age will abound, the love of many will grow cold. The focus, the commitment, the dedication to living the way we know we should can begin to be eroded as time continues and as the world offers so many different options in general. So that's one reason why, and I'll go back to Luke 21 again, verse 19. Here's what Jesus says about that condition that we have to guard against. He says in Luke 21, verse 19, by your patience possess your souls. By your patience. Your life depends on your patience. And I'll chase you back to Matthew 24, where he says in verse 13, he who endures to the end will be saved. By our patience, we possess our lives. If we endure to the end, we will be saved. The same Greek word is used in both of those sentences. It's one is a noun, the other is a verb, so that they in the Greek are slightly different. But the word translated patience, which is a noun, is the same word that is translated endures in Matthew. That's the verb. So you have the noun form and the verb form of the same the same word, by our patience, we'll be able to endure. And they both refer to the need to be able to bear up under difficult circumstances. That's what the Greek word means. The strength to bear up under difficult circumstances. All of these circumstances that Jesus describes here in this passage are difficult. Living in this world is difficult. I mean, it's depressing to consider the conditions that you see all around you and the tragedy that this world is continually, people are continually suffering. That's difficult to see. It's hard to watch. It's difficult for us to bear up under the stress and the trials that we have and to hang on to that truth and that promise even in the face of temptation. It's difficult, but we have to have the strength to bear up under it. And that's what Jesus states here after describing all these issues, all these problems, all these conditions that we'll have to deal with. It is by our patience that we possess our hope, our life. And we must endure all of these things, have the strength to stand up to them so that we can be saved. I mentioned the first time we started talking about this a couple of weeks ago that it'd be interesting to have a timeline, starting with Abraham and fill in all the details all the way up to the time of the White Throne Judgment. You know, everything that we know is going to happen. We put a lot of things in place. A lot of the major milestones we could put on this timeline if we only had enough room to draw it. But what we're talking about right now is where we are on that timeline. We are in those troubled times that Jesus warned of. The times that would be, the events in of those times indicate that the major change is coming. The change from this age to the next age. That transition is something that's not going to be easy for us to deal with. I gave a series of sermons a few years ago that I called the storm before the calm. The things that we have to go through first before we get to the millennium and the White Throne Judgment. We're in those troubled times. Now, we're in the time still where Jesus said that the end is not yet, and it won't come immediately. But we're within that time when we are to be aware of and we're warned of what is happening. There are many conditions that are shown here that either haven't happened yet or will intensify over time. But again, if we're watching the leaves on those trees, we can see, we can sense, we realize that changes are coming, and we're not going to be taken totally by surprise. For today, we'll conclude in Luke 21. See, this is part of this same message that Jesus gave, and it's only recorded in Luke's account. But they're very clear and specific words that Jesus speaks to as a warning to his disciples. Luke 21:34. Luke 21:34. Take heed to yourselves. And again, give a little thought to the word heed. You could look it up, do a little word study. It means to pay really, really close and careful attention. Because when that word is used, it means that what follows is extremely important, and we need to be fully aware. So take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come on you unexpectedly. The warning that Jesus gave was that it's going to come upon the world unexpectedly. And he's given us a warning so it won't sneak up on us. But then he says, be careful. Be very careful. not to get drawn into sinful activity or the cares of this life. If we get distracted in that way, then the warning that he gave will mean nothing to us. Verse 35, for it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the earth. Yeah, everybody else is going to be taken by surprise, but we don't have to be. So watch, therefore, and pray always that you might be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. It will come to pass. And I think that's kind of a sobering reminder as well. There's no question that what is described here is going to happen. We talk about it. I think this time of the year we focus on it. It's good that we do because of the meanings of those days that we're about to observe. But these are things we've been talking about them for years. And we've been watching those leaves on those trees for years. And things are beginning to change. Something that we're aware of. Watch and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things. As we continue, I want to talk some more about what Jesus expects of his disciples. In any age, especially in the unstable times that will lead to the end. What are those things that Jesus says that we need to be heedful of or careful of that we might be counted worthy to escape? What are the things that we need to be aware of so that we might be able to escape? And how might we be able to escape? Our understanding of the events that Jesus described here in this prophecy and what will happen prior to that new age that is to come are of great importance in our lives. And we'll continue reviewing them as we prepare and look ahead to our observance of these fall holy days.